Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And it's Sunday afternoon, not Friday afternoon.
Right. And we're live, which is exciting. It's always fun.
So we'd love to get... We have a theme for the program, but we are always happy to take calls with questions, 410-662-8780. If it's a recipe fix that you're after Cindy Wolf for, or if you're any food or wine information, if you're planning a dinner party, if you're looking for travel information, you can also reach us toll-free, 866-661-9309, or email us, if you like, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And on the program... We're at harvest time.
It's a great time of the year. Yes.
That's you get the bushels of apples and the big old pumpkins coming in and all that kind of business.
It's great to see the pumpkins.
And in the wine growing places in the world, it's harvest time. It's their entire year's work all of a sudden is at its crux.
I can't imagine what it feels like to be at this time of the year for them. Obviously, it's so important to their livelihoods and to their art and to their work. So
it's the place where agriculture and art meet, right? And living art at that, in the case of some of the finest wines in the world.
And it continues to live on, which is what's so amazing about it.
But the thing
even
that,
in the bottle.
I mean, imagine you spent the entire winter preparing vines for the growing season. You work through the growing season to try to prepare the vines to produce the best fruit that they can. They are producing fruit. You're trying to take care of it.
You pray about the weather, probably.
I cannot imagine how
you pray
many
for
times.
No hail. See, first of all, probably.
For me, it's easy because someone's going to grow great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if this grower's entire season doesn't work out, it's not going to break my heart. But my God, now can you imagine being in the shoes of that grower? Right?
No. I mean, what you're saying is you can buy whatever you want to, but the person that is dependent upon that crop and that production is at the mercy of the weather and everything that's going on
and the birds.
The final product. Oh,
and
yeah.
The birds.
I tried to grow peaches this year, and the squirrels ate every single one of them. I think I got one peach and in no time. And I also broke my foot, but I mean, that was part of the lack of my ability to go pick them.
You broke your foot growing peaches?
No, I just broke my foot, but during, unfortunately, the peach picking time, so I wasn't exactly out there hanging around the trees, but the squirrels got to them long before I could, so I can't imagine what the farmers have to deal with. And
So to that end today, we have a couple of different wine growers, winemakers coming on with us, and we're going to talk to them about what their harvest time is like this year, and it's a real treat to get them at this time of the year because it is
so busy. Yeah.
Such a busy time. And I talked to a couple growers who were just, I talked to Elisa Scavino and she and her sister and dad were like, we love you. We'd love to come on the show. Call us in a month.
Right. We get it. We
call
get
us
it.
In a month because you know what? This Sunday is going to be crazy busy.
I bet. So they're picking now.
They're in crush right now.
Scavino is one of, oh my gosh, it's such a great,
amazing,
great.
Amazing producer. But anyway, we have three different growers lined up, one in Oregon and two in different regions in Italy. And I wanted to try to get a snapshot for folks of just what's common between the growers and what's very different in different places in the world and what was different about their growing season and about their harvest right now, depending upon what they're harvesting, what grapes they are, what it is they're trying to make. So, and I think we can go to our first, and you can call with questions for winemakers if you like. It's 410-662-8780 or toll free 866-661-9309. And we have one of my favorite growers in Oregon at Tresadum Winery in the Willamette Valley, James Fry, on the line. James, you there?
I am indeed. Good morning.
Good morning, James. So glad you're with us. Thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure.
And being a little bit foolish, I wanted to use a bunch of wine growers' time this morning to just try to get people a snapshot of how busy and crazy it is this time of the year, what the harvest is like, what crush is like. So what's going on at Tresadum?
Well, we are coming to the end of about 7 weeks of harvest. So we started picking Pinot Noir for sparkling wine back at the end of August. And I just finished 2 days ago picking the last of my Riesling. which we pressed and we're putting into some barrels this morning. And so we're on about day 52 without a day off.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
I think we've
got
about a week. Yeah, and that's pretty normal. I mean, we typically any harvest will go from about 45 to 55 days, where you're there every day. I get to the winery at 6:30 every morning. I taste through all of the ferments, and then make decisions. By the time my winemaking team and intern teams get to the winery at 7:30, they know what we're going to do for the day. And but it's great. It's a lot of work, but it's absolutely the best time of the year. It is absolutely my favorite time of the
That's
year.
That's great.
So take a moment and give people a quick idea of what it is. What is the range of what you grow and produce? What I certainly buy and enjoy the Pinots and the beautiful Riesling that you make. But give people an idea of what Chisadem does.
Yeah, thanks for the kind comments. Yeah, so Chisadem is in right in the heart of Oregon's Willamette Valley, which is the largest growing region in Oregon, and predominantly known for Pinot Noir. We're about 30 minutes south of Portland, Oregon, near the top of the state, near the Washington-Oregon border. And I would say, 60 to 70% of the grapes being grown in the Willamette Valley are Pinot Noir, and that's no different for Chisadem. I have three vineyards that I planted and I grow from. And I would say about 60% of our fruit is Pinot Noir. About 30% of what I make is Riesling. My family is a combination of Alsatian and Germans, and so I had no choice but to make Riesling when I started making wine. And
it's in your blood, right?
What's that?
It's in your blood. Yes,
it is. Yeah, it's funny. And actually, I started making Riesling before I even knew the depth of what was in my blood and how deep my I knew the Alsatian part. I didn't realize that on my great grandmother's side, they're all from the Mosel, and I learned that a little bit later. So yeah, there's definitely something maybe in the DNA that caused me to make eight different Rieslings a year, and then I had to make a little bit of Chardonnay as well. And those are very common varietals that we make here in Oregon: Pinot Noir, some Chardonnay, some Riesling. The other growers make Pinot Gris out here. I don't make Pinot Gris myself. I focus on the three that I've mentioned.
And so tell us, and thanks for the sort of recap of what you guys do. Tell us about the 2015 growing season and what harvest is like this year. What is your first prognostication and what was the season like?
Yeah, Mother Nature has been extremely kind to those of us in Oregon this year. And Oregon is a cool viticultural climate, so it can be very dicey. You can spend the whole year with a beautiful growing season, and the typical harvest in Oregon starts right around October 1st. We're way in advance of that this year because we're almost done, and it's October 11th. And so October 1st also kind of coincides with when the rains come in Oregon. And so there's always kind of this dance with Mother Nature of trying to make sure your fruit is perfectly ripe, but watching the weather forecast every morning to make sure that it's not going to rain on your harvest. So this year was one of the earliest years on record, which makes it a little bit easier because September is a very dry month typically in Oregon, and it was very dry for us this year. We kind of got to pick whenever we wanted. We got to harvest in T-shirts, which we normally don't get to do. Usually by the time we're picking fruit, it's getting cold. It's very cold in the morning, so we're bundled up and drinking coffee to stay warm. And this year was a very, very fun and pleasant harvest just because the sun was shining, and we got to really pick when we wanted to. But we also know in Oregon that next year could be just the opposite. In 2011, I hadn't picked a single grape in 2011 by October 11th. So you just have to celebrate what Mother Nature is going to do and understand there's going to be some vintage variation and be comfortable with watching the weather a lot for a couple of months.
I think that's one of the things that's really fascinating about Oregon wines, and especially Oregon Pinot Noir, is the distinct character of the vintages. And the first thing that comes to mind when you say warm year and harvesting this early, is it going to be like 2009, do you think, in character?
No, that's a really good question. I don't think it'll be quite as ripe as 2009, even though it was an early vintage and quite a bit of heat accumulation, warmth kind of during the summer. I really think the harvest time period, we had some really wonderful cool nights, and so I think it's probably more akin to maybe what we would have seen in 2012.
And the 12s are,
a little
12s
bit of
are
what
beautiful.
We saw last year in 2014, so not you know, so I think it's going to be a very balanced, still good ripeness, you know, fuller wines. But what I'm really happy with in warmer vintages, you do worry a little bit about, you know, losing some vibrancy, losing some life because the acids start to drop, and we just didn't see that this year. We were able to kind of get the exact ripeness that we were hoping for, with still beautiful acidity in the fruit, and so that translates to life and vibrancy in the wine. So, yeah, I think there's probably a lot of optimism, right? It's early. I try not to get too too excited too early. I'm pressing Pinot Noir right now downstairs in the winery. We're pressing off a couple of fermentations of Pinot Noir, and the wines are beautiful, but, you know, until they get some time in barrel, until we really, you know, get into the spring and see how they taste, we won't really know. But I think there's a lot of optimism because there's good ripeness, beautiful acids, and at least right now, we're feeling pretty positive about the 2015 vintage.
That sounds terrific. That sounds like a pretty balanced sort of recipe for wines that might age and be really attractive as they age. So maybe like 12s or 8s.
Exactly. I think 8s are probably another a good comparison vintage-wise to what I think we're seeing here in 2015. Very exciting. And anytime you can harvest again in T-shirts in Oregon, you're pretty happy.
As there's so many Pinot Noir fans in the world, how would you place, for people that have only ever drunk California Pinot or only have pretty much ever drunk Burgundy, how would you tell them to approach Oregon Pinot Noir?
That's a great question, it's something that we talk about here in Oregon, and kind of where do we fit in the world of Pinot Noir. And I think a lot of folks would, and I tend to agree with this, is we're somewhere in between the two growing regions you just mentioned. I think California being a little bit warmer, even though they grow Pinot Noir in cooler areas of California, just maybe a little fuller, more fruit-driven Pinot Noirs maybe. Where Burgundians might be a little bit more mineral and a little bit more acid. I think Oregon falls somewhere in between those two, and I think this vintage is probably the perfect example of that, where we've got good ripeness, good fruit, beautiful tannic structure, but the tannins are a little bit more velvety, and there's still nice vibrancy and life to the wines, and so I think we fall somewhere in between. We'll have some of that minerality and earthiness that you often see out of Burgundian wines, but we also have a decent amount of fruit that you'll find in the Pinot Noirs out of this area. But again, it kind of depends on the vintage. This is a vintage where I think we're in between California and Burgundy. But in a cooler vintage, we'd probably look more like Burgundy, and in a really warm vintage like 2009, I think we'd probably look more like California.
You want to tell folks a little quick something about the Riesling style styles that you produce?
Yeah, so we actually make 8 different Rieslings, which is a lot in the new world. But I do a dry style and I do an off-dry style. So I'll do a style of Riesling that has very little residual sweetness. And I do a single vineyard Riesling from all 3 of my vineyards, because I think Riesling, like Pinot Noir, one of the great things about the grape is that it does this amazing job of taking what's in the soil, what's in your sight, and putting it in the glass. And Pinot does that as well. And so I think in Oregon we like to celebrate single vineyard wines, because I have 2 vineyards. My Ribbon Ridge Vineyard and my Dundee Hills Vineyard are 4 miles apart, but they're worlds apart in terms of the wines they produce, because one is sedimentary soils, ocean-based soils, one's volcanic soils. And so I think with both the Pinots and the Rieslings, we like to do single vineyard wines. And so with the Rieslings, I do a dry style and an off-dry style from all 3 of the sites, and then a combination of the 3 vineyards.
Are there any chefs, a little off topic, sorry.
So a chef has a chef question
for
you.
Yeah, are there any chefs in your area that you're particularly excited about that we should know about for guests that may want to come and visit you and also have some good food?
Oh, absolutely. We are are blessed here with an amazing restaurant scene with terrific food. You've got just down the road from us the Painted Lady with Alan Rout as a chef does just an amazing job. The Jory restaurant at the Allison with Sunny Jin, equally fantastic food. But you've got Recipe and Nick's and Bistro Maison, Tina's. I mean, just a we're very fortunate. And I do have to say, I've been to Baltimore. I've only been to Baltimore once, but I was fortunate enough. My only meal in Baltimore was at that Charleston restaurant, and I still remember the lobster bisque with curry oil in
yes.
that, and it was so wonderful.
That's nice.
So yeah, and the great thing, one of the benefits of being a winemaker is you get to eat some wonderful meals, and we have some great restaurants here in the Willamette Valley, and I'm fortunate enough to get to try places around the country and
around
the
world. That's great. Well, thank you for talking with us.
Yeah. Oh, so, my pleasure.
I got one last parting question for you. What is the most unlikely, really successful pairing with one of your wines, food-wise, you've ever had?
Ooh, the most unlikely. Oh, that's I think, you know, it's not unlikely, but it's the one that surprises people the most, is when you take a dish, a really spicy, hot Thai dish, like an Asian dish, and then pair it with an off-dry Riesling. I think it's magic. I think the sweetness in the Riesling helps balance out the heat in the food, and I love spicy Thai food, but sometimes the challenge is after a couple bites, my mouth is exhausted from the heat.
Exactly.
And so the sweetness in an off-dry Riesling just kind of refreshes your palate, and you get to kind of enjoy the entire meal. I also had a similar experience with a barbecue in San Francisco with an off-dry Riesling that was really terrific that Harvey Steinman from the Wine Spectator ended up writing a blog about. It was kind of one of those surprising combinations that just kind of worked. So, don't be afraid of off-dry Rieslings with spicy food. It can be a really magical combination.
Very good. Well, all the best with your harvest, and I hope your wine is exactly what you want it to be, and all good things happen for you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good luck with the 15s, and keep up the great work.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have a few more wine growers from different places in the world, and happy to take your calls with questions for the winemakers or other questions for us. 410-662-8780 or toll free 866-661-9309.